And we've just been talking about representation of the people. What is just representation? What is fair representation? And actually, when we look at all of history, when we look at, there's a saying, if you want the facts, read nonfiction. If you want the truth, read fiction. It's also been said, art is the lie that tells the truth. What the heck is this? What am I talking about right now? It means that the fantasies, the dreams, the mythologies of any culture actually tell you, in essence, what that culture is about, more so than the actual facts and details. I gave an example of that when I mentioned the founding of Rome, where Romulus slew his brother Remus, brothers raised by wolves. You know, this tells you a lot about what the Romans were truly like. And here in America, we don't exactly have that kind of mythology. We don't. But we do have, for example, comic books. Just as one example, you have comic books. Comics reflect what our society is, what it cares about, things like that. And this is even before it became really popular in movies, which has only happened in the last decade or so. Spider-Man, X-Men, everything like that. Even before its recent popularity, you look at these characters. All of you, I'm sure, have heard of Wolverine. Wolverine. Well, who's that guy? Again, we see all these principles of history. You see, people are in this to make money. They want to make some money. And so they want the biggest market possible. And so Marvel Comics, they said, you know what? Let's see if we can't appeal more to this Canadian market and create a Canadian superhero. People like to hear about themselves and see themselves as heroes. We should make a Canadian superhero, and that will make more Canadians buy our comics. And they said, let's name it after some fierce northern animal. And it was between two of them, either a Wolverine or a badger. And it was a toss-up. They weren't sure which one to go with, but they went with Wolverine because badger sounded too much like a nagging wife or something like that. So that's why it's called. And it was originally called The Wolverine, but then they dropped the. Just like Facebook used to, it was originally supposed to be called The Facebook, but then they dropped the so it would sound more fluid and streamlined. Now, Wolverine has various abilities, but his big superpower, his main superpower, is the ability to regenerate, super healing. That's what Wolverine's big power is. And what is his big problem? What is the problem he has always had in comics and movies and everything like that? He cannot remember his past. It's a complete blank to him. Now there have been different reasons given for this lack of memory in the movies, in the comics, and everything like that. Various reasons and explanations, but one very obscure one, I heard this 10 or 15, I read this maybe 15 years ago, maybe even longer than that, maybe 20 years ago, and I doubt you will ever hear it again. But the theory is that Wolverine's super healing ability made him lose his memory because he experienced something so traumatic that his body worked to heal himself from that by making him forget that. And in fact, that's not only what happens with people, it's what happens with countries, it's what happens with basically all of history gets sanitized, and countries like Japan, countries like areas like Central and South America, the histories have been obviously and clearly washed out so that the bad stuff is eliminated. And the society moves forward like that, even though it's not the real history. But you know what? Just like with people, sometimes it's not a good thing to dwell too much on the past. Sometimes it's not even healthy to do that. And all this stuff, these lessons of history and everything like that, apply just as much to our own day-to-day lives. When you see, even in fact, people with photographic memories. Okay, it's a very rare thing to have a truly photographic memory, that very few people, when they read a book, they can remember where every comma was, every single detail, and that's what it is. But they do exist. And the thing is, it's not that they have a superior brain necessarily. They've analyzed it because scientists wanted to see, what gives them this ability. It's actually they found that something in their brain is not working properly. So it's a defect in their brain that they're not able to scrub the information out. And I've seen interviews, multiple interviews with multiple people with photographic memories, and they complain about it. They're very unhappy that they have all this junk stuck in their head that they can't get rid of. It's very unpleasant for them. We're really meant to forget things as a people, as a country, as whatever it is. And it's the past is a very difficult thing to grapple with. And if you see other examples where history has changed and modified and everything to make it palatable, you see Batman. Batman, I'm sure everyone here has heard of Batman. And all this stuff should really be in your guys' notes. You know, I understand that I commend you guys for actually sorting through what you think is important and what you think is not. In most classes, that would be a good thing. And I appreciate the good motivation behind it. But here, what we're trying to do is just take in every single thing. Turn your mind into a black hole that sucks everything in. And I will go deeper into this later in the semester, why we do the notes in a certain way, why I want you to do this and that. But anyway, Batman. So, you've all heard of it. A Batman character from DC Comics actually started with DC Detective Comics. They had this anthology series. Batman didn't have his own comic. He appeared in this series, Detective Comics, that had different characters in it at different times. And, okay, he came in, and he originally carried a gun. And he would shoot the bad guys and whatever it is. But believe it or not, at this time in America, America was kind of anti-gun. And they were really concerned about it. And comics in general, they were concerned about, they're beating people up. What's this? It's violent. And what's his superpowers? Is it anti-Christian? All these kinds of things. And people were looking at the comics very closely, possibly looking to shut them down. And so DC Comics, they rewrote an origin story. They created an origin story after the fact where Batman as a child had watched right in front of him as a mugger shot his parents and killed them. And therefore, Batman will never use a gun. That's why Batman will never use a gun. So they created, after the fact, this origin, this history, just to make the character more palatable to the masses. Now, you've all heard of Superman. And the character was actually created in the 1930s by two Jewish immigrants. Siegel was one and Schuster was the other. So two Jewish friends, and at that time, well, all the time, but especially at that time, immigrants had to struggle to fit in and be accepted in America. And especially when you see anti-Semitism and everything like that, that was extreme. It might not be to the level where they would burn a cross on your lawn or lynch you or something like that, but it was certainly extreme. And what people would do, Jewish people, for example, if their features were not, their ethnic features were not extremely prominent, sometimes they would try and pass. What does that mean, try and pass? Well, it means that they, even some very light-skinned African-Americans would do this, they would try and pass for white. They would have this secret identity and to fit in and be accepted by the masses. Now, even if they didn't want to try and pass overtly, it was still this idea that you had to keep your, okay, you're an openly practicing Jew, fine, but you better keep your head down and your mouth shut. Maybe we'll leave you alone, but you keep your traditions quiet. Stay away from us. Don't have too much pride. Don't be too showy. And it's been said that this character of Superman is an expression of this problem and this angst, where you see Clark Kent, okay, he has to be, he's mild-mannered, very meek, humble, everything like that, but if you only knew his real identity, his true identity of Superman, you would see he was something really amazing, literally a Superman. When you see Kryptonian writing, if you've ever seen it, it looks similar to what language? Hebrew. If you see, what is Superman's father's name? Jor-El. What is Superman's real name? Kal-El. These are Jewish sounding names, and in fact, Kal-El in Hebrew means vessel of God. And here you have this situation. Now there's other things which I'm not going to get into here. There's a lot to anything we look at, a lot of depth. Like one of these two creators, his father actually got shot and killed and murdered. And, you know, it's probably not a coincidence that he now comes up with this character that's bulletproof, that can't be killed by bullets. He denied it. He's always denied it. But, you know, there's probably at least a subconscious connection there in some way. Now, bearing in mind that these superheroes are literally supposed to be super in their representation. They are idealized humanity. The extreme, the ultimate. You know, Superman is supposed to be super, superior, the ideal toward which we should all aspire. And when we look at these things, we really see what a society actually values as superior and ideal and super and fantastic. You've all heard of the Fantastic Four. Fantastic Four. Now, if we were in person, I would ask you, I would ask the class, who can name me the superpower names of all the Fantastic Four? And usually, it's not 100% of the time, but almost every class I've ever had, they name, okay, you know, all the male people, and then as the final one that's named is the female character. Female character is the final one. Oh, yeah, Invisible Girl, something like that. Invisible Woman, whatever. Almost as an afterthought. But let's break it down here. These are archetypes. Archetypes. Basically, they're like symbols, and they're presented as the example of what the ideal should be. That the creators who are writing them and creating them have their own biases and things like that, and reflect the biases of the society of that time. How each one represents the appropriate, quote-unquote, appropriate aspect of society. You look at race, age, gender, a physical body type, all these types of things. You see that these superheroes are white, heterosexual, athletic. You know, there's no fat superheroes. There's no handicapped superheroes. This is a perfect world without all this bad stuff like minorities and things like that. So you have Reed Richards, Mr. Fantastic. You have Ben Grimm, The Thing. You have Johnny Storm. He's the Human Torch. And then you have Sue Storm, who is the Invisible Girl. The Invisible Girl. And what happens is, let's go through this in order. Now, mind you, all of them are going to be white, none Jewish, not even acne or anything like that. No imperfections or whatever it is. Everyone has to fit a certain mold in order for them to be something superior and something to be looked up to. So let's say, you know, preferably blonde-haired, blue-eyed, everything like that. But let's take this piece by piece. Reed Richards, what is his superpowered name? Mr. Fantastic. Mr. He's a respectable, adult, authority figure. He's the team leader. And he's like the father figure. He represents the father figure in America. What that's supposed to be. Now, isn't it interesting? He's not blonde-haired and blue-eyed. Well, that's yet another stereotype. You see, you know, if that's so looked up to, if that's so preferred, why not make this team leader blonde-haired and blue-eyed. Well, there's this, you know, stereotype that blonde people can't be taken seriously, that they're frivolous and they're like whatever. So he is a team leader. He's supposed to be authoritative. He has brown hair. More than that, he has graying temples at the side. He's a respected, authoritative person. People look to him for advice and guidance. It's he has glasses. He's a scientist. He's smart. Smart people are supposed to have glasses. Isn't that obvious? He's taller than all the others. Smart, tall people, they should be, you know, the leader should be someone you look up to, literally. A tall person should be in charge, not a short person. And what is his superpower? What is the thing that makes him super? He stretches. He's flexible. He's adaptable. The American father, the head of the household, he will adapt and adjust to whatever comes up. That is his ideal. Whatever happens, he'll lead his family through it and just deal with it. He expands to shelter them from projectiles coming at them or fire or anything like that. He, whatever needs to be done, he will take care of his family. Next one, Ben Grimm, and look at his name. It's not Mr. anything. His name is The Thing. Even from his name, you can tell he's a serious, no-nonsense, rough, tough, gruff. His name isn't Trevor Winthrop. It's The Thing. And his superpower is what? Now, mind you, the character, Ben Grimm, he's bald-headed, very like too much testosterone and this type of thing. He's husky, he's heavy-set, well-built, strong, powerful. He used to play football. He's a mechanic. These are very manly things. This is what a man is supposed to be at the time this character is being created. And what is his superpower? He's super strong. He's super tough. He's literally a rock. And that's because metaphorically, this is what the American man is supposed to be, the American fighting man. Solid, a rock. That's what it is. Red-blooded, strong, impervious to harm. He's not sensitive where he goes and cries at romantic movies and this and that. He's invulnerable to pain. Simple, blunt, powerful, strong, the ideal American man. Then you have Johnny Storm. Look at the name. Look at the name. Not John, not Jonathan, Johnny Storm. He's a young teenage guy. He is blonde-haired and blue-eyed. He's physically fit, everything like that. He's what the American teenager needs to be. Not really serious, just rambunctious, wild, free. He drives a red, shiny convertible sports car, dates lots of girls, usually a different one in the passenger seat every time you see him. Always attractive, of course. That's what a young man is supposed to go for in a female. What is his superpower? What is his superpower name? The Human Torch. He's a blaze of glory burning across the sky, incandescent, reckless, loud, listening to rock and roll. It's sowing his wild oats. That's what the American teenage male is supposed to be. And then finally, again, almost like an afterthought, you have Sue Storm, Johnny's sister. And she, Sue Storm, this representation of the ideal female, has to fit a certain type, a body type. White, of course, blonde-haired, blue-eyed, large-breasted, relatively small-waisted. And never mind that that's unnatural. What happens is women naturally, either they have large breasts and large waists, or they have small breasts and a small waist. It's very unusual to have large breasts and a small waist. But this is what men have wanted, and therefore women have had to try and fit into that mold, even though it's unnatural. And we could get into a lot of stuff. We could get into like the so-called models and everything like that, where you know, these fitness models now, needless to say, they are heavily doctored. These photos that we see, I hope you all know that, these women, even in the movies and TV, lots of makeup, perfect lighting, everything like that. And if you see them in print, they're computer altered, all kinds of things like that. And even then, even if that were how they really looked, you would see that, okay, are they really models? Are they actually physically the ideal? No, they have lots of health problems. They smoke cigarettes to control their appetite. They oftentimes have eating disorders. They have bulimia. They have whatever it is. So this is not right. And to a slight extent, it happens with men as well. I mean, you see a lot of these guys who are really strong and buff and everything like that. They're juicing. They're on steroids and whatever it is. But it's far, far less, infinitesimally less, compared to what men make women go through. So you have, and by the way, another side note, I don't want to get too deep into these things, but I at least want to mention them. Like everything in history, it's cyclical and it's in flux. So if you look at the ideal body types from, let's say, 10 or 20 or 30 years ago, they're very different from the ideal body types now. And things move in cycles, just like fashion. Oh, you know, I spoke to one of you who's interested in fashion and whatnot. I do recall, if we get a chance to do my famous Soul Train lecture, it's a one lecture I have that has a lot of visual aids and videos, but maybe I'll do it through Blackboard at the very end of the semester. And one of the things you'll see is fashion, it's very cyclical. The tie width is the most clear example, where it expands and contracts and things like that. Things go out of style and then they come back in style. High-waisted jeans were in style, then they went out of style, then they came back in style. Everything like that. Same thing with body types. Now, the waist of females is seen better as being wider, whereas when I was younger and everything, it had to be really thin. There was a saying, there's no such thing as being too rich or too thin. So another of the many, many things we see about history and from history is things are cyclical. They go in and out and everything like that. At the beginning, for a long time, she is constantly getting captured by the bad guys. And her family the men have to come and rescue her. She is literally a damsel in distress. That's what the ideal female is supposed to be. And keep in mind, these young boys and everything are reading this. And this is forming, they're shaping their expectations and everything like that. And this is, okay, the girl, she is... she's captured, and then a man is going to come and save you. And that is your place in society. Your hopes and aspirations should revolve around a man coming to rescue you. And the ultimate expression of that is the wedding. A man will literally make an honest woman out of you. Then your life can truly and finally begin. The happiest day of a woman's life, when finally her life has meaning because a man has come into it. And now she can start doing what she's supposed to do, which is looking after the man. And what was her superpower? What is the thing that makes a female super? The ability to invisibility. So essentially, the ideal super female is the one who can best make herself unseen and unheard. You know, it sounds ridiculous. You know, what's her next superpower? Mopping floors, doing dishes. And it sounds ridiculous, but really, it's not so ridiculous. You know, and even today, you know, and I'm going to show you how change over time is reflected and everything like that. But you see, I've had students tell me, you know, females and everything like that, oh, you know, when they were kids, they really wanted to do skateboarding. But people would tell them, oh, no, why are you doing that? That's for boys. And they didn't do it, and they really regret missing out on these things. But things, especially, I think it started in the 60s, but definitely the 1970s. Things definitely by the 1970s. We were looking at history, we were looking at comics, we were looking at everything with a little better view and saying, hey, this really isn't fair, this really isn't right, it's not appropriate. And her abilities started to grow, where she would, for example, use her invisible force fields to knock people out, to beat up the bad guys. She would put force fields on the enemy and trap them. It's It got to the point where not only did she not need rescuing, but sometimes on occasion, she would even go out and rescue the men. Wow, what a revolutionary thing. A female contributing just as much as the males. Incredible. It's like watching a dog play the piano. Who would have imagined something like that was possible? But that's what it is. And that's got to the point where her name was changed from Invisible Girl to Invisible Woman. Other characters, you see, I remember there was like Spider Girl and this and that. Phoenix. You see Cyclops' girlfriend in X-Men and everything like that, Jean Grey. Her original name was Marvel Girl. So, you see, this cord seems to have come out here. Okay, I'm going to see if there's any problem with this recording before I actually send it. The cord just came out for a second, that's it. So, you know, everything you look at where you see a God forbid homosexuality, that was, and you guys might not know this, but even on TV and everything like that, it really wasn't prominent at all, and it was nowhere in comic books. It's only really around the time this TV show Will and Grace came out that really started to change things. And that's another question about what I'm saying right now. Is it that art is influencing the society, or society is influencing the art, or both? In what ways? You know, all these questions are things we need to explore and understand. But you see, in comic books, now they've got gay superheroes. And it's also interesting the ways in which they deal with these things. How do they have gay superheroes? Well, sometimes they create new ones. You know, new superheroes that happen to be gay. And you can tell because they're in a relationship with a same-sex person or something like that. Other times they've retconned. What that means is basically retroactively changed the status of characters, like Colossus, this X-Man who can turn metal and everything like that. I believe they've made him gay. Thor. Now, I'm not exactly sure about that. I'm less sure about that, but they have a female Thor now. And it does seem more just. I didn't realize it initially, but rather than making new characters, I mean, what about all this stuff that's already there, which people haven't had access to, minorities haven't had access to? They should. They should have these different things and these issues of how do we achieve social justice. You know, how is just as important as actually the what. How do we achieve this thing? I mean, one thing I've noticed about history is we tend to conflate wrongly equality with sameness. For a woman, for example, to be equal to a man, she should be like a man. And that's not the way it is. Women can be strong in very feminine ways. They don't need to be punching people out or arm wrestling or shouting at the top of their lungs. And really, to achieve that, it oftentimes needs to go deeper, where we have not just, oh, let's try and make female characters or this or that. Let's try and have female writers and female artists and things like that. You see, in other ways, you know, certainly religion. We have Muslim superheroes now. We have all kinds of things. You have handicapped, where now they've become more prominent in culture. You see The Walking Dead, if anybody watches that show. You have at least one character who is deaf. You have, there was a mattress, Serta mattress commercial, with a child without legs for the first time, and it had nothing to do with them being handicapped. They were just there like a regular person, because you know what? They are just regular people. They're not some adjunct at the side or something like that. People are supposed to be people. So it shows us a lot about culture, about history, but it's not only right now that this has happened. All throughout history, we've seen perhaps forward-thinking individuals or whatever it is going back to the 1940s. So coming full circle here, all the way back to the times of, you know, Superman and Batman and whatever it is, the 1940s, a little bit after them, you see this Dr. William Marston. I think his name is spelled M-A-R-S-T-O-N, as in Nancy. Marston, he actually wrote this article in the Family Circle magazine that, you know, you comics should actually are potentially really valuable educational source, you know, back when it was seen as just frivolous entertainment for little kids. He wrote that no, they're really powerful, and what we really need are good female examples. We need a good female example to show girls what they can be and all their potential and everything like that. And this this comic publisher actually took notice of what would eventually become, he was actually eventually the company would merge to form DC Comics, which is very famous. And he contacted Marston and said, you know what, if you think this is such a good idea, why don't you come up with a female superhero and we will incorporate it. And again, there, this is not all just altruism or anything like that. The comics, this is at that time when, as I said, people are really concerned comics are fostering violence and aggression and everything like that. So how do they solve it? Well, a girl. Put a female out there. And then that will be the thing. Oh, girls are nonviolent and this and that. So that's fine. He creates this character, Wonder Woman. Wonder Woman. Now, he creates this Wonder Woman with the help of his wife. This is very important. Like so much of history, women are involved and heavily involved and don't get the credit or anything like that. And here, it's not a coincidence that he's able to write this character, so create this character so well. It's because a woman was helping him, an accomplished woman herself. Her name was Elizabeth. But also, this guy Marston had a very unusual life that people did not know about. He actually lived with another woman. He lived with his wife and another woman in a relationship with all three of them had together. And the other woman was actually a former student of his, Olive Byron or something like that. Actually, the Wonder Woman character, part of the reason she wears those gold bracelets is because Olive used to wear jewelry just like that on her wrists. Now, and there are some other things going on. I mean, Marvel Comics had, it might have been called Timely at the time, but Marvel Comics, DC's competitor, had recently come up with Captain America, who wears the American flag, and this is during the time of World War II and everything like that. Therefore, DC also has to be patriotic and have a character wearing the American flag. That's why Wonder Woman is wearing the outfit she's wearing. But of course, she wasn't born in America. Where is she from? Where is she from? She is an Amazonian princess. Wonder Woman is from the island of Themyscira or something like that. Mythical island, of course, but with these Amazonian warriors. Now, the ancient Greeks had this legend of these, a myth really, but at least a legend of these Amazonian female warriors who were expert. In fact, it is even said, this is a disputed etymology, the name Amazon, Amazo, without, is because these warriors, women were so dedicated, they would cut off their right breast or burn it off just to make it easier for them to pull a bow, for a bow and arrow. That's one explanation of the name Amazon. And by the way, you have that Amazon River. Why it was called that is because this indigenous tribe attacked these groups of Europeans in the 1500s, I think it was. And they seem to be led by women. And so they said, oh, let's call this after the legendary female warriors that the Greeks talked about, the Amazon warriors. Let's call this the Amazon rainforest and the Amazon River. And now, actually, when we look back, it could easily have been that they were boys, and they had just long hair, and they weren't fully grown men, so their features maybe looked a little more feminine. That could easily be the case, but that's how the era became named after the Amazon. And since the Amazon River has more water flowing through it than any other river on Earth, Jeff Bezos, when he started his internet company to sell books and even everything else, he said he wanted it. The big advantage is he could sell more books than any physical store. He could sell more of everything than anything. And like the Amazon River had more water flowing through it, that's what he wanted his store with products to be. And so he named it Amazon. But anyway, so Wonder Woman, this is not some meek, docile woman who's only going to be doing vacuuming and cooking and cleaning and everything like that. Even when you look at her assumed identity among the humans, she is a business executive. She wears a suit. She is a person of some authority and knowledge and competence. You see, what does she have? She has an invisible plane. She has a plane. And remember, put yourself in that position back at that time, and even for decades later, airplane travel was seen as this really exotic thing which made you really amazingly free. You could go anywhere, see anything, even though now we see it as a drudgery. You know, you're packed in like sardines and everything like that. Airplane travel used to be very different, very expensive, but very, very different. And then you have all these screenings now after September 11th terrorist attacks and whatever. It did not used to be like that. And especially in the 40s and 50s and 60s, it used to be a really glamorous thing, the absolute freedom to do whatever you wanted. And she has her own plane. Look at that. And then what are her accessories? What does she have? She has a magic lasso. I mean, a golden lasso. It's probably magic. But a gold lasso. And it's unbreakable. And what happens when she lassos a man with it? Not only can he not escape, but it forces him to tell the truth. Now, firstly, you see with history, if I were to go into any of these things, you'd probably be surprised. Anything we cover in this class, you'd probably be surprised at how connected it is to so many different things. This guy Marston, Dr. Marston, he was a psychologist, and he helped create the lie detector. He helped invent the lie detector. And so here, Wonder Woman, able to be, has this thing that's a lie detector. And now we see, by the way, this is no longer the male fantasy, this is the female fantasy. The ability to get any guy to tell you what he's thinking, to be honest with you and tell you the truth and everything like that. But anyway, we move forward. And before I move on, you know, these things with tying people up, Wonder Woman was always being bound up and chained up and this and that. And yes, it was a metaphor for women being caged and trapped. But also, he seemed to be really obsessed with S&M. Sadomasochism and these pin-up pictures of women being bound and spanked and this and that and whatever. Anyway. So what else did she have? She had these gold bracelets, which I referred to earlier, and she could deflect bullets with them. They're great. But at least one of the comic book storylines had it where if they touched together, if these separate gold bracelets touched together, they would make her lose her power. And that could likely be a metaphor for being trapped in a gilded cage. What on earth am I talking about? Gilded, when something is gilded, it means it's covered in gold. We will shortly, not next lecture, but maybe the lecture after, probably next week, or soon we'll be talking about the Gilded Age in America. And gilded means to cover something in gold. And a gilded cage is this thing that's been said where, okay, you might be in some nice conditions. You might be women in the 1940s and 50s and everything like that. Because America was at that time the most affluent nation in the world, they lived in considerable comfort. There was considerable comfort there. They weren't starving. They weren't this and that generally. But the thing is, even if the cage is really nice and covered in gold and everything, it's still a cage. Women at that time, yes, they might have been well cared for in terms of creature comforts, but they weren't free. The man's job is basically to keep his woman, his wife, something like that, happy with some material goods, a nice dress, maybe some perfume. If she's really, really good, buy her some jewelry, something like that. But the women were supposed to be at home, cooking, cleaning. When the man comes home, she immediately greets him at the door, takes his hat, his coat, everything like that, asks him how his day was. He doesn't ask her how her day was. She doesn't have a life outside of assisting him and helping him. It's as if once he leaves the home, she's like a computer going into suspend mode that only reactivates when he gets back home. But that's what it is. And there were manuals on how a wife is supposed to take care of her husband and basically do all the vacuuming and everything like that before your man gets home. He's had a hard day. He doesn't want noise disturbing him. That's the type of thing that women are supposed to be doing. And if you look at extreme situations, this is terrible, but things like domestic violence, it was not, you know, that would happen all the time. Unfortunately, it happens a lot now. I didn't realize how prevalent it is. It's shocking to me. But it happens a lot now. But back then, it was accepted. It wasn't even a big deal. A husband could just give his wife a black eye like it was nothing. Even worse than that. And she wasn't going to go to the police. Even if she goes to other people, her friends or something like that, what would be their response? Commonly, they would say, "What did you do?" Basically, what did you do to deserve it? Blame her. Pretend the problem doesn't exist. That sort of thing. And this is what it is. We need to look and see what actually happened. Face our history, face our reality, not like Wolverine, deleting the history that's uncomfortable, retconning things to make it more palatable, anything like that, but actually engage with it and come to grips with it. It can be very subtle. I mean, through most of my life, I didn't understand this thing, but I didn't realize that a lot of men that are very helpful to women. I would see that, oh, okay, they'll help out this, they'll help out that. But in fact, it's only if that woman, that female, is lower than them, lesser than them. If they ever tried to be equal or, God forbid, superior, then it becomes a whole different thing, an adversarial thing, an antagonistic thing. And I only later in my life realized, oh, wow, you know, they care about these women like they care about their dog. As long as it's lower than them, that's fine. But it must never be equal or greater or anything like that. And that's not a real healthy relationship. That's not a correct, appropriate way for us to interact with each other. And again, this is closely tied in to what we were just discussing about politics and how we interact with each other, because frankly, yes, I think you can all see how lecturing on that stuff, how our Constitution was created and everything, relates to our day-to-day life today. I think you can all see, okay, there is a reason why we need to take this class, and it connects. But much, much, much more important than that, we're learning the concepts and the skills and things like that. We're seeing, okay, how some of the greatest minds in history our founding fathers thought about how people should get along with each other. At least when it came to that issue, they were some of the greatest minds in history, because you see how well it worked. And that not only applies to our country right now and international relations, as I say, it applies to our interactions with each other, with friends, with family, with fellow students, with teachers, with abstract things, with the school, with justice, with all these types of things. So we're learning these skills and we are cultivating these skills. We all have these skills, don't get me wrong. Everybody in the class can run. Everybody in the class, I'm sure, can read. But how well can we do these things? And the more we practice it, the more we train it properly, the better we will become at it. And it will affect every single thing in our lives. Now, we are going to get a little bit more abstract. We're going to get into some of these ideologies which we need to know. We can't really move too far forward in American history unless I first explain some of these ideologies to you. Communism, socialism, capitalism, of course, super important. Fascism, all these types of things, these isms, very important. And we'll probably start with communism. I will introduce it to you. And you will see how it is an extremely super, super extreme ideology. Now, one thing you see, one of the many things you see from history is one extreme gives birth to another extreme. So what created communism? What created something so extremely anti-capitalism? Well, it's from a point at which capitalism ran amok. It became incredibly exploitive and brutal, and that is the Industrial Revolution. So we'll be starting just not too deeply, but we'll go over communism, and that way you'll understand the Korean War, Vietnam War, Cold War, all these different types of things. But before we can talk about communism, we have to go over what gave birth to it, and that will be the Industrial Revolution. The Industrial Revolution, which is also very important in American history. Before we can talk about Henry Ford and all these people, we need to talk about the Industrial Revolution. So that will be next lecture. We'll start with the Industrial Revolution and go out into probably communism. But first, let's have these two test terms, okay? Draw a dash and write ISM, as in mountain. So dash ISM. And for that you need to write, that is the test term, and for that you need to write suffix, SUFFIX. Suffix, SUFFIX. Denoting. Do you remember I explained the difference between denotation and connotation? So suffix denoting a distinctive system of beliefs. Suffix, denoting a distinctive system of beliefs or way of doing things, period. Now that's what you need to know about it. And you can see it in different things like, Buddhism is the way of Buddha. Anarchism, the way of anarchy. Barbarism, the way of the barbarian. Criticism, the way of the critic. Or baptism, the way of John the Baptist. Okay, so that's it. And we'll get into all these things I just mentioned. Fascism and whatever it is. But next test term. Draw a dash and write IST. And by the way, a suffix. What is a suffix? A suffix comes at the end of a word to modify its meaning. I just gave you examples of it, like barbarian, you put ism, barbarism. It's different, it modifies it. A prefix comes at the beginning of a word. So if you see clockwise, anti-clockwise, You put anti in front of it, or matter and antimatter. When you put the prefix anti in front of matter, it makes it something different. So a prefix is something you put on the beginning of a word. Suffix is something you put on the end of a word. But here, this second test term, dash IST, for that you need to write suffix, suffix. Used to indicate adherence. Used to indicate adherence to a certain doctrine or custom. Used to indicate adherence to a certain doctrine or custom. Period. Okay, so those are those two test terms before we really get into some of these ideologies. But I will say this one concluding thought. As I gave the example earlier of like physics, where they're teaching this example with a bowling ball and a feather, dropping it to show gravity. Again, the point is not about bowling balls and feathers. It's illustrating principles and concepts, things like that. I would add to that now, I would close by saying it's also a good test, these different things. I mean, part of the reason, like I gave that sneaker lecture and everything like that, to show you it's not about the subject matter, it's about the lessons and everything from that. The math teacher doesn't want you, a decent math teacher is not going to want you to remember 63 plus 4 is 67. They're doing that to teach you how to add, so you don't have to memorize every single detail. It's just using those details, random details, to show you the general principles so you will know and understand. But I would conclude with this concluding thought. It's also something to see as a test if you're getting a good education, if you're really learning the right thing. Those principles have to apply. Not only can they be learned from any random thing, they can be applied to any random thing. Therefore, if these principles and these concepts are not applicable in everything, in comic books and sneakers and everything like that, you're getting a bad education. If that lesson on gravity from a bowling ball and a feather did not apply to other things, to anything basically, anything you look at, a textbook, a laptop, whatever, you need to find a new physics teacher. You need to get a refund on what you paid for that class. And it's the same thing here. These principles, these lessons, they apply in everything. And I hope we will cultivate that more and more as we go through the semester. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.